Hey, Startup Hustle listeners, before we get into today's episode, I've got some exciting news to share. If you've enjoyed the insights and stories here at Startup Hustle, you're going to love what we have in store at our brand new podcast called Product Driven. I've always described myself as a product guy first, entrepreneur, software engineer, but really a product guy. I love building products. Many people struggle, though, with how to take a product idea and build a tech product, while software engineers struggle to understand the business side of things and they just don't see the big picture. My new podcast, Product Driven, is about that gap between business and the tech side of building software. It's designed for startup founders, tech leaders, software engineers, and anyone who loves tech and startups. Thank you for being part of this community. Enjoy this episode of Startup Hustle, and please subscribe to Product Driven in your podcast app, and you can also check it out on YouTube. Thank you so much.
And we're back for another episode of Startup Hustle, a podcast for entrepreneurs by entrepreneurs. If you want to start, own, or build a business, then you're in the right place. We bring you the real truth about what it's like to take something from concept to launch. From growth, innovation, experience, failing, or winning big, we've got you covered. So let's get down to business with another episode of Startup Hustle, brought to you by Fullscale.io. And we're back for another episode of Startup Hustle. Matt DeCourcy here to have another conversation that I'm hoping helps your business grow. All right, everyone's heard of a search engine. Everyone's heard of marketing. What happens when you put the two together? You end up with search engine marketing. Now, this is something that in my many years of participating in that activity, I've learned that there are a whole lot of people that claim and want to be experts at this, and very few that actually know what the hell they're talking about. Fortunately, I have one of those people with us here today. And before I introduce him, I want to let you know that today's episode of Startup Hustle is brought to you by Fullscale.io, helping you build a software team quickly and affordably. Now, with me today, I've got Jason Barnard, straight out of Paris, France. And I got to tell you, I told him that I was sad that Kansas City lost the Super Bowl. And he said to me, the Super Bowl is just what I eat my breakfast out of. Let's give a nice, warm Startup Hustle welcome to Jason Barnard. Jason, what's up?
Yeah, it's lovely to be here, and I'm delighted by the introduction, sharing my secret.
Yeah, and thanks for joining us all the way from the other side of the pond, where I believe football is actually a different sport than what I was talking about. So, Jason, you're the CEO and founder of CaliCube. You do a lot of digital marketing stuff. You know, I know that today's topic is broad and far-reaching. When we say search engine marketing, that only covers about 10 million different things. We'll figure out what we want to talk about, but first, give me a little background about you.
Right. Well, I mean, thank you for asking. First of all, my backstory is I was a punk folk musician in the 90s in a group that was quite famous in Europe. That fell apart. So I created a TV series and website with my ex-wife, which was a cartoon with a blue dog and a yellow koala. I was the blue dog. My wife was the yellow koala. We had phenomenal success. We ended up being one of the 10,000 biggest sites in the world by 2007. 5 million visits a month, which is stunning. 100 million page views a month, which is stunning. And a million of those visits, the 5 million visits, came from Google, which is how I segued neatly into digital marketing, search engine optimization. So I became an SEO Google specialist. And as you say, there are boatloads of people who say, I know what I'm doing, and very few of them actually have a clue.
Yeah, and you know, I talk about that some in my book, Million Dollar Bedroom, where I encourage people to begin to think like a search engine. And you know, this is a map that is constantly changing. The way what you could do 10 years ago and what you do now, completely different things. Maybe we start there, like, you know, oh, and by the way, what was the name of the band?
Oh, it was called The Barking Dogs. It was funk, I was going to say funk poke. It was punk folk. I can't even say it anymore. If you know the Pogues, it was a bit like that, but more aggressive, let's say.
Okay. Okay. I can get down with that. So, let's start with the evolution of search engine marketing. Cause like, 10, 12 years ago when I started doing it, it was the Wild West. I mean, there was very few rules and a shitload of things you could get away with. Now it's a lot more structured. And, as you and I talked before we started the show, the whole landscape's changed a little bit. So let's bring some people up to speed on that. I'll just hand you the mic, sir.
Right. Well, I think the single most important thing to remember is that right from the very beginning, the aim of Google, I mean, we'll talk just about Google. I mean, Bing is obviously the same. That's Microsoft. Bing is Microsoft's version of Google, but most of us know Google. Google's aim has been the same since the very, very beginning. It's to provide answers and solutions in the most efficient and effective way possible to its users. Now, if you bear that in mind, in fact, search engine optimization, SEO, hasn't changed in 22 years. We're trying to package our content to help Google provide the best solution to its users. Second point on that is never, ever, ever forget that we're not talking about your users in this context. We're talking about Google's users. Your audience is a subset of Google's users. Google has gazillions of users all over the world. Of those users, let's say 100,000, 200,000, 1 million, 2 million, it doesn't matter. Of those people are your audience or your real audience. And what Google is trying to do is match the subset of its users that is actually your audience and send them to you because you provide the best solution. And it's as simple as that. It's always been as simple as that. And as you say, there was lots of things we could do. It was the Wild West. It's less Wild West now. And if you're a marketer, you're probably in a very good situation today, whereas 15 years ago, you weren't.
Well, tell me why as a marketer, I'm in a better position today than I was 15 years ago. Because I'll be honest, 15 years ago. Now, look, I'm one who sometimes bends and shapes the rules to the way that benefit me. I'm not going to lie about that. Mm-hmm. I've learned some tough lessons from Google. I've been penalized and stuff like that. I think you kind of have to go through that hell before you get into it. But as a marketer, I look at the Wild West days and I was like, man, I could really do a few things here, do a few things there. Next thing you know, I'm getting tons of traffic where it's a lot more structured now. So why do you think why do you think marketers are better off now?
Right. Well, your story sounds very different to my story. I'm a bit of a naive blue dog. I was in a cartoon and the idea was we had a blue dog and a yellow koala who were providing games and education and songs and silly things for children aged up to 10 years old. And we didn't cheat. We didn't play the system. We didn't game the system, sorry, is the correct word. What we did was simply create great content with a lot of engagement, a lot of inbound links. And I suppose I did game the system in the sense that I wrote the texts, the copywriting around the games in a way that would please Google. So what it was when Google was, let's say, stupid, was it was a question of Google would count the number of words or the weighting of words in a page, say that page represents this solution or answer to the question or the problem my user has suggested, and this number of inbound links indicates that this page is popular, therefore this is a good result. And it was as simple as that. And that's why you could game the system, because Google didn't think beyond counting words in a page and counting the number of inbound links and the relationship between those links. So a site that has a lot of links will obviously count for more than a site that doesn't have so many links. So you ended up with a system where you could quite easily game it, especially with calculating the right number of words or creating a group of sites that all link to each other that indicated to Google that they were all popular because they mutually linked to each other. I mean, it was that dumb.
And it really was. I mean, it really was. That's part of what got me into hot water at one point, because I talked about this a little in the book, just so you have a little background, because I say think like a search engine. The founders of Google were research scientists, so they had to figure out how to rank one site above another. And in the world of research science, footnotes and annotations and like being cited, citing other work. So that inbound link and then the authority of that site that went with it controlled the power of it. Now, what you were talking about linking everything together, a link wheel, used to build them all the time. And it was like, you almost funneled the authoritative power into this fine little laser. Now, you talk about playing above board or not. The problem was 10 years ago is if you wanted to rank at all, you didn't have to jump in that pool, but you maybe had to stick your leg in it a little bit, because there was a lot of the algorithm and search in general lacked the sophistication that it has now. Now, you wouldn't get away with any of that shit now, but and I know you're an expert on branding and a lot of other stuff too. And that's the challenge, because you saw a lot of people kill their brands. And I know you're in Paris, but in here, one, they're probably going out of business now because retail failed in many regards, but JCPenney's was really, really notoriously called out for gaming the system on like search engine terms like blue jeans and stuff like that. And they got, it kind of killed their online brand for a while. So sorry, I wanted to give a little context to the complexity. So back then you could amass enough links and do enough kind of semi-tricky stuff. It was gray hat. It wasn't like totally black hat in many regards, but yeah. And then it just kept changing. It was like, and it's honestly, Jason, that's why I kind of gave up on it. Cause it's like every few months you had to like relearn a whole new approach and try to figure it out. And now it seems a lot more. Now we have a different approach now, which is creating quality content, which if we had just done that 10 years ago, we probably wouldn't have gone through the heartache, But yeah, I mean, so what's the difference now? Like, where's the big change, or what branched off from all of that? Is it just more sophistication with the algorithm?
Right. Yeah. Well, point number one is that John Mueller from Google, I did an interview with him a year ago, and he points out that Google doesn't hold grudges. So if you have completely messed up, like JCPenney, you're suggesting, I don't know the backstory to that. You're not dead in the water. You can still recover. Google doesn't have this kind of terrible memory where it's going to punish you for the rest of your life. So that isn't necessarily something you need to worry about. But what you do need to think about is why it's changed and where we're going today. And the key change was 2015. The history of that is actually a question of not what Google wanted to do, but the technology that they had at their disposal. In 1998, they already knew what they wanted to do. It was create the Star Trek machine that answers your question, potentially provides you an answer to a question you haven't even asked it yet. And that is where they always wanted to go. And you got these quotes from 1998. Listen, we want to create the Star Trek machine. Very geeky, but actually really interesting in the idea that they're saying, we want to show you we want to provide you with the answer or the solution to the question or the problem you are about to express, as opposed to the one you just expressed to us. So a search engine will provide what it considers to be the best solution to your problem. An answer engine will recommend, and that's where we're at now. But an assistive engine will provide the solution before you've even thought about the fact that you've got the problem. And that's where we're going. That's where they were always going. And the question and the problem that were holding them back was technology. And I can tell you the whole story. I actually did a course at Google where they went through their entire technology development, and what has happened is that they have built the technology to do what they want to do, which is why we have a lot of the technology that we take for granted today. Big data, data rivers rather than data lakes, all of this is very technical. Let's not worry about that. But what they've done is they said, we need to achieve this goal, and they built the technology that allowed them to do it. So if they couldn't beat, I mean, a really nice example is machine learning. Is they Google are a big driver in machine learning because they need it. They need the machine to be able to write its own algorithms. And that is where 2015 is absolutely key. Up till 2015, you had people who would sit down, they would write the code, and they would say, right, if we have this number of words, then that's good. And if we've got this number of links, that's good. And that's why you could cheat it, because they're human beings, they write code, you're a human being, and you can probably guess what they've written. So you can cheat that code, you can game the system. 2015, the people who are writing machine algorithms, i.e. machines that write these algorithms instead of human beings, suddenly got the upper hand and could suddenly write better algorithms than the people themselves. And it switched. It's called Hummingbird. And if you look it up, it's really interesting. 2015, all of a sudden, the machines got better than the humans.
And at, you know, it's funny. You mentioned the hummingbird because they always have a clever name.
Yep.
And, you know, I wrote about getting killed by a penguin and a panda at one point. And we were guilty of a lot of duplicate content. And that was the end of that search engine marketing experiment for us.
Yeah.
However, we rang the cash register a lot on the way to that. But then all of a sudden, it's interesting you said that Google doesn't hold a grudge, because I disagree, because I was never able to get that particular site to do anything again. Now, maybe now they forgive your misgivings, but at the time I couldn't do anything to clean that thing up. It was like it had an albatross hanging around. We actually just let the domain go and you know, started over.
Well, and there are two things, one of which is John Mueller speaks for Google. So he says what Google is supposed to say. And obviously what I repeated is what they're supposed to say. But I would also suggest that there's also a cleanup question. One of the reasons, I mean, if you think about it, penguin and panda, black and white. You talked about black hat. Black hat is cheating. White hat is doing it the right way. So they had these symbols which were black or white. We're gonna try and actually drown, get rid of all the black stuff, all the black hat techniques. Hummingbird is multicolored and beautiful and wonderful and takes us into a new future. And symbolically, I think that's a really important point. And I think the thing that people fail to understand is, and I've had clients, somebody who came to me with these black hat techniques, problems, penguin, panda, and they said, okay, we want to clean up. We've been caught and punished by Google. How do we unpunish ourselves? And the answer is you clean it all up. You clean up the mess you made. And when you do it properly, you recover, but you recover to a point that you were never at before, i.e. you're never going to hit that same level. You were cheating to get to that level. Google isn't going to give you that level again, not because it's punishing you, but because you never deserved it. And the algorithm is just going to say, well, you actually don't deserve it. You actually have to do the content and create answers to questions that your audience truly asks and solutions that are truly helpful to your audience, who are, I repeat, a subset of Google's users. These people are not your users. They're not your, they're nothing to do with you. You're asking Google to recommend your solution to its users. It's a business. It makes money from its users, just like you. It's trying to satisfy its users, just like you. If you have a slight piece of empathy, and I'm not saying you have to think Google's a wonderful kind of entity and a wonderful thing. But if you think about what it's trying to achieve, it's actually trying to achieve the same thing as you are, satisfy its users.
Well, and you know, I remember that because, you know, people used to get so salty, you know, about all of that. And you have it right. I mean, Google, you're in their world, you're in their business. And their business, and part of why people trusted the brand and used it, was they are in the business of making recommendations and putting a user on something that has the greatest overall ability to answer their question or solve their problem. Now, in the 550 episodes of Startup Hustle, I think we've said about 500 times that any good business solves a problem, and that's exactly what they're doing. So, you know, some of that is as we came out of you know, one mode and went to another was actually improving the content and also creating well-rounded content. You talk about, so Google owns YouTube. You should consider embedding some videos or doing some other stuff. And, you know, and also don't be shy about, hey, look, if the answer you're looking for isn't on this page, here's a few links that take you somewhere where that might exist. And that's another priority of Google is if they don't put you on the result, does that page also help you maybe get to where it needs to be? Now we actually certainly figured it out because between the properties, the web properties, my business and partner and I own collectively, we get about 1 million organic visits a month. Right. So something's working
You get as many as the blue dog and the yellow koala.
Getting there. I'm trying to just keep up with you, Jason. I mean, look.
Sorry, I was teasing. I do apologize.
I know, but I want the cool accent. I want to have been in like a British punk band. And I mean, who doesn't want to have been a blue dog? And I want a super bowl of cereal every morning. So you have it figured out, my friend. You have it figured out. Now, but you talk about figuring it out, though. One of the things is all right. So, and I admit it, and I wrote all about this in my book. I was towing the line, if not crossing it. I got slapped so hard by Google. I learned a really important lesson with that. I'm glad I learned it early. I was maybe only a year or two into that whole experiment. And now coming back, we definitely focus on well-written, well-created, in like content with an intent of solving a problem, having a conversation, teaching, entertaining. It could be a whole number of things. But overall, one thing that I noticed is the basic mechanics. So we are basically blog marketers. And that is a common form. That's probably the most common form of search engine marketing at this point, other than paying. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I think that's definitely true. I mean, the whole Google is incredibly important, but I mean, the basis is not Google. The basis is content. And I'll let you finish, but I've got I think that is quite insightful when you get to the end of what you were saying.
No, I'd like to know. Well, where I was going with that was really in the end, one thing that hasn't changed is there are some basic mechanics of search. And you know what? You're right. You say it isn't just Google. It is mostly Google. There are other search engines out there. But the thing that never really changed was it had to be quality. It couldn't be spammy bullshit. It had to have a title that was relevant to what whoever was searching. You're not gonna publish or create a page with the name Matt and Jason talk about search engine marketing and then expect to find a blue cartoon dog if that's what you're searching for, right? It has to be relative. It has to be. And then another thing too that we really saw change over time was Google wanted to see you get more in depth. They wanted an article that wasn't 250 words. It wasn't fluffy. And sometimes those work. But if you wanted to get the good search results, it really did have to be something like, and you talk about the sophistication of the technology. I got to assume that they're using optical character recognition and a lot of different things. They know what's on your infographic. They know what's in your video and they tie it all together. But really in the end, it always had to be something that didn't suck.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, it has to be something that doesn't suck.
That's our key tip. Let me make a caption for that. Key marketing tip: make something that doesn't suck. All right, sir.
And here is where I actually stand out from. Don't necessarily agree with the SEO crowd that I come from, and I think that there is a tendency within the SEO community to think, right, okay, we have Google, we have these keywords, these search queries, and we want to create content that serve these search queries because we want to rank for them. Fine, that's a great way to approach it if you're only thinking about Google. But if you're a marketer, and this comes right back to the beginning of this conversation, if you create content that is truly useful to your audience, that truly helps them with their needs, their problems, and their questions, and you push that out onto different platforms, for example, Twitter or YouTube. It is part of Google, but it isn't part of Google. It's kind of an ambiguous situation. But you push this content out to your users, and you make it profitable for yourself on that native platform that you have created the content for, where your users, your audience, sorry, are already hanging out. Then you say, I've got this content. How do I package it for Google? So Google can then take this content and realize for which of its users it can recommend it. So it's a question of packaging content that you create for your users for Google. And Google becomes the bonus, and not, in French, the raison d'être. The reason that you create the content is not Google. The reason is the user. That's marketing. Google is your bonus.
By the way, my wife's been learning French for the last 10 months. I'm tempted to pause the show and bring her up here and test how good that's gotten. I'm completely off topic there. So, I mean, but we're still back to the key ingredient of making something that doesn't suck. Now, you know, it's really easy when we talk about search engines and search engine marketing to Google, 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 but there's a lot of search engines that, for example, Amazon in many ways is a search engine, and it's one of the most popular, and quite honestly, it might be the best for selling stuff for a lot of people, because people go to Google to ask questions, to poke around, to kick tires, stuff like that. People go to places like Amazon because they want to buy and do it right away. So there are, you know, and I've learned a lot about that search engine algorithm, selling books and other stuff. YouTube is one of the most popular search engines. That's another, now that's a Google product as well. What are a couple other ones that are out there that we should at least mention while we talk about the whole category?
Well, number one, Microsoft Bing. I think we underestimate it. People say, oh, it's 5%, so it's nothing. But 5% is actually, if you're in B2B, it's incredibly important. It's huge because a lot of these companies use Microsoft products. Therefore, they're blocked into Microsoft. They have to use Bing. So if you're B2B, Microsoft might well be, or Bing might well be the most important. Apple are building a search engine right now. They've stolen. Oh, that's the wrong word. They have recruited
borrowed
some people from Google, and they're going to build one. Then you've got DuckDuckGo, you've got Startpage, you've got all of these other search engines that are relatively small. And we tend to focus on Google, as you say, because it's so phenomenally big. And there are also search engines such as YouTube, Amazon, other platforms. I mean, even Facebook is a search engine. Don't ever forget that. The question is, where is the user in their journey at the moment they use that particular engine? So Amazon, you said, yeah, big, yes. But these are the people ready to buy. They won't be, or they will less be looking at Amazon at the beginning of their process. They will be more looking at Facebook, or they will be looking at Google, or they will be looking at Bing. They'll be looking around to see what the options are, and they will tend to search on Amazon where they've made the decision what they want to buy, and they're just looking for the cheapest price. So it isn't actually necessarily such a very good comparison. What Google are trying to do, and Google's danger or Google's problem, is that what they do is they, as you almost said, or as you were suggesting, is that they bring the user to the point at which the user is ready to buy, and then the user switches to Amazon, goes to Amazon because it's really cheap and it's easy. And what Google are now trying to do in the big battle for Google is to say, we, Google, whoever they might be, need to nail that last little step. We want to stop that leakage to Amazon. So you've got the 7 touch points that everybody talks about. It might not be 7, it might be 20, it might be 25, depends on your product, depends on who you are, depends on the date. It used to be 7 in the 90s when I was in a punk band. Now it's probably at least 15. But the idea is you're going to be getting those touches on Twitter, on YouTube, on Medium, whatever these platforms are. Google is just another touch point, and that last one is probably the most important. That's where I'm completely obsessed by brand SERPs, which is what your audience sees when they Google your brand name. Because when they're thinking, am I going to buy from this company? Yes or no. Am I going to buy this product? Yes or no. They search it on Google at some point, probably. And at that point, what Google then shows them is what Google is recommending. It's giving an appraisal of your product or your brand or the entity, the person, whatever it might be that somebody's searching for. And despite ourselves, we trust Google. So what Google shows us is incredibly important.
Well, that's that simple validation. you know, and it's the same thing. And like, you know, there's something you said that really just stuck in my head as you're saying is what point of the journey is the visitor at? And that, you know what, for those listening, that's a key ingredient, because if someone's at Amazon first and they're just poking around there and then they leave and they go somewhere else, they're not at that point where they're buying. Part of what is, you know, I think a lot of people like I said, we're all kind of tunnel visioned into Google, Google, Google. Now you talk about Bing. So like, all right, let's be realistic. Well, at least here in the US, you say Bing, people are like, what? You know, like they don't think about it. But if you have 5% of a global market of something as big as search, are you better off to go try to stand out in a place like Bing than get caught up in Google? Or because, you know, I noticed I mentioned like catching a Google penalty at one point, but now a lot of those search engines actually kind of poured in Google results and do different stuff. But at the time, they were all different. So we weren't affected in like Bing and Yahoo. And I got to say, you know, ask Jeeves, because your accent is making me think of Jeeves. But what one, and that's another thing too, is the sophisticated people actually ask search engines questions in a way that they didn't do it before. It wasn't the same thing. There's even sites and stuff that try to help you do that. Now, speaking of helping you get good search results, I want to talk about your business, your digital marketing company. And speaking of businesses, today's episode of Startup Hustle is brought to you by fullscale.io, helping you build a software team quickly and affordably. Now, if you go to KaliCube, that's KaliCube.pro, that's your business, and you help people with digital, you're a digital marketing agency. What do you guys do over there?
Right. Well, as I said, we're specialized in a couple of things, one of which is brand SERPs, search engine results pages, SERP. It's what appears when your audience Googles your brand name, or Bings your brand name, if we want to say that. And what we do is help brands to optimize that. I mean, I like to say Google is your new business card. I talk to you, I tell you how wonderful my company is. You're likely to just search KaliCube or Jason Barnard. What then appears is phenomenally important to your opinion of me. Despite whatever I've said, however convinced you are, Google is going to give you an appraisal of me or my business if you search that name. So the brand SERP is incredibly important for prospects, but also for clients, journalists, investors. Anybody who's important to your business will Google your brand name at some point in their journey with you. That's number one. Number two is knowledge panels and the knowledge graph. Now, that's really complicated, and I won't get into the details, but basically, Google and the other engines, Apple, Facebook, Amazon, Bing, Twitter, LinkedIn, all of these machines need to understand who you are and what you do and who your audience is if they're to present you to their users as a pertinent solution or a pertinent interest. I mean, for example, Facebook will show me interests around what I'm looking, what I tend to look for, whereas Google is tending to offer me solutions. So they need to understand who you are, what you're doing, who your audience is. And that is all, for all of these machines, it's exactly the same system. It's a knowledge graph. It's how a machine understands the world. Now, we understand the world as human beings by saying, here's an entity. It's the Startup Hustle podcast. It has a relationship with Jason Barnard. We now have that relationship in our heads and it makes sense to us. Machines are trying to understand that. Jason Barnard, his mother is Kate Westbrook. His sister is Clio Barnard. He works with a company called Wordlift. He works with a company called SE Ranking. These are all entities. SE Ranking, entity, it's a company. Wordlift, it's a company, it's an entity. Jason Barnard, entity, works with these other two companies. And Google, Apple, Facebook, LinkedIn, Microsoft, Amazon, all are building machines that aim to understand the world in the same way that a human does, which allows them then to say, for example, Jason Barnard is interested in football. English football, soccer. not American football, Kansas City Chiefs. Jason Barnard would potentially be interested in this topic, that company. They can understand what my interests are, what my relationships are, and start to present to me, as we said earlier, the Star Trek computer, solutions to problems I didn't even know I had, or interesting topics that I hadn't really fully investigated or that I might be interested in investigating in the future, which is what Facebook does. So CaliCube specializes in feeding these machines that information. I would like to say educating them like a child. They're all children. They want to learn. We need to educate them. That's what CaliCube does.
Yeah, and I think you have a good point. There's, you know, when we talk about brand, I mean, so much of that comes down to our personal brand too. Like, you know, there's a zillion people out there doing a zillion things. And, you know, when you call or you try to reach someone or someone hasn't heard of you, they Google you. Yeah. So you need to pay attention to that and do a few things. It takes a little bit of effort to groom it. Like, you know, I talk to some people and I'm like, you know, you go Google them and it, okay, if you Google Matt DeCourcy, my LinkedIn page comes up first. So I should pay attention to that. I should make sure that it doesn't look like shit and that it has it updated and it's accurate and it's engaging. And you have a whole number of things. You talk about like knowledge panels. And so I've written three books, which means that that's something notable that Google looks at and they'll, you know, you're talking about the little column on the right. So yeah. Now you have a history in music. I actually worked in the music industry for in and around music and live events for 15 years. And I have a lot of, I wrote a book on the music industry and have a lot of friends that operate in it. And we always, they always give me a hard time. They're like, yeah, I see your search engine results for your name are looking better, but I have more sections than you still. You know, but and they're just joking, but that's but there's this validation factor that comes in. And remember, when with your personal brand as well, people just want to see you're credible. They want to see that what's going on. So yeah. Kind of build that same thing around yourself that you also build around your business. I think it's all very important.
Well, that right hand side is phenomenally important. And I'm going to schematize is that on the left hand side, Google is giving you suggestions, recommendations. On the right hand side, it's giving you facts. When you see that right hand side, it's a fact. We believe what Google says. Google is being really, really careful about what it puts in there. Gets it wrong sometimes. You know, it's a machine, and the people behind it are people. Mistakes are made. But as a general rule, once it puts something on that right hand side, it is sufficiently confident about that to say, this is a fact that I'm willing to stick my neck out for. And once that happens, it means Google has truly understood who you are, what you do, who your audience is. And that's the basis of absolutely everything that is to come. If you don't have that, you're dead in the water for the future. Those word counting and link counting that we talked about earlier will count for absolutely nothing. I mean, it isn't even a debate anymore. So you need that right rail. Now, the big question, you were talking about music, and I think that's stunningly interesting. Why is it that on that right-hand side, we have so many musicians, so many stars, so many people who have written books? The reason is because Google has had that data in a structured manner for years and years and years and years and years, because you have Wikipedia, IMDb, Music Brains, Discogs, Google Books, in fact, with their own, but you also have Amazon and all of these sites that present this information of media. And that media information is incredibly present on Google in that right rail as fact, because Google has the structured information, these sites that have prepared the information with human beings have prepared the information and presented it to Google in a way it can digest. Now, the big problem with business is we don't do that. We've never done that. And there is a big lack of that kind of structured information. And that's what CaliCube does, is it says, let's take a step back. Let's look at what we are presenting. Who are we? What do we do? Who is our audience? And we present it to Google in a structured manner on our own site. And then we go out and corroborate that information. So what I'm kind of trying to say is that there is a heavy weighting towards all of this media stuff, simply because the information was already there for Google in a format that it could easily digest. What we need to do as businesses is to present our own information to Google in that same format. And we have to do it because our fans are not going to do it. If you're, the Stray Cats, my favorite group, or the Barking Dogs, my old group, or I've written a book, fans are going to write about it. Fans are going to help make that information available. As companies, we don't have fans, so we need to do it ourselves.
Yeah, and I did have to tell Google about some of this. I mean, some of this is mildly self-serving for them because, I put my name into Google just for purposes of this conversation. And the book links, they do link back to a place on Google where you would buy them potentially through Google. But the rest of the stuff, you have to claim this. I had to make some effort to claim this panel and validate. I had to send in like a picture of my ID. I had to do a whole lot of stuff. I basically had to apply to it. And then I just had to wait and see. And, like you said, there was a level of validation. It's kind of like, I don't know, you look at things like, the little check mark on Instagram or whatever. But these things matter, people, because, and that's the thing, especially if you have a new brand. And, we're here on Startup Hustle and we talk about new businesses a lot. Like, it's work up front, but you need to go through and fill all these profiles. So, if I look at putting just my name, and so say I'm calling someone and I want to talk to someone, they're like, who the fuck is Matt DeCourcy? So they put in my name and they go look and they're like, oh, this dude's written some books and he does some other stuff. And there's
that's immediate credibility. So, yeah. Sorry.
It is. It helps. So and then the very first thing, it's my LinkedIn, then my Twitter, and then there's another Matt DeCourcy. Now here's the thing. There's a famous politician in Canada, also named Matt DeCourcy, spells his name different. But then back to my Instagram, 3 videos about me on YouTube, some other media. It's got Facebook, it's got YouTube, and then Audible, which is also my book. So you get 9 out of 10 spots. Now certain things like my business partner, Matt Watson, that's a really common name. So if you Google Matt Watson, you actually come up with a dude that's like a really well-known online gamer. So sometimes it's not as easy and straightforward to catch this real estate. It really depends on who you are and what you do. Now you're right. As far as brands, you got to build your reputation does matter. Cause I think that having no reputation is actually worse than just having a mediocre one.
Right. And there are a few questions there. I'm going to try and go through them one by one in some kind of logical order. Number one is, as you say, people's names are ambiguous. There are 250 Jason Barnards in the world, probably more, let's say 300. I mean, I don't know. I haven't counted them. But if you search Jason Barnard, you will find just me. And that isn't because I'm the only famous one. There is a footballer who's actually pretty famous. There is a politician. There are multiple digital marketers. The reason Google is showing me and not the others is because, there's a podcaster in the UK as well who's quite famous, and he's absolutely brilliant. So if you want to listen to a music podcast that's a bit kind of off the wall, he's brilliant. And what it's doing is it's showing me because it's so very confident in what it's understood, because I have educated it and I've convinced it to a point of confidence. It's saying, well, I'll just show this because at least I know it's true. So you have that aspect. You also have the geo aspect. If you're in San Francisco and you search my name, Jason Barnard, there's a professor at the Golden Gate University. So there's a certain amount of ambiguity. So I don't get all the places because there is a probability that they're searching for him and not for me. So you have that probabilistic nature, you have the confidence nature with brands. Because of trademark and copywriting laws, there tends to be less ambiguity by geo-region. Through geo-regions, there is a lot of ambiguity. So you have those questions. And then the other question you were talking about that I think is important to note, that you can claim your knowledge panel. Once that knowledge panel appears and it says, this is Jason Barnard, he's a French-British musician, his mother is Kate Westbrook, he's done these films, he's done these records, he was in this group, so on and so forth. Claim the knowledge panel, you claim it. And then you can actually ask people at Google to change information. Some of it you can ask them to change, like your social profiles. Some of it you can't, such as your subtitle, i.e. Jason Barnard, British French musician. I can't actually get a human being at Google to change that. It's not possible. They don't have no control. But even if I ask them to change a piece of information, such as my social profile, they change it by hand. If the machine thinks they've got it wrong, it will switch it back within a week. So you still don't have the control. Even the people at Google don't have the control. The machine is in control. So if you have a false piece of information in a knowledge panel about you or your brand or your company, you cannot rely on a human being at Google to change it and to correct it over time. You have to go and find why the machine has made that mistake, why the machine has misunderstood, and correct the information the machine is using to draw its conclusions. And if you don't do that, you will never correct that piece of information long term.
All great points. And I, by the way, I did Google Jason Barnard, and it was definitely you, unless you have a doppelganger. Which you
the red shirt,
they say you are wearing a red shirt. How did you do that, sir? Jason's working with real time knowledge panel results, people. Later when he you can always tell what color shirt Jason's wearing at the time. I'm just kidding.
That whole kind of thing is what you were saying. Sorry, earlier, really quickly, you were saying you had your LinkedIn profile and all the other ones. If I might criticize, the one thing you are missing is a home for your entity. And it's something that a lot of people haven't really thought about yet, is Google needs to know what the canonical is, what we call it. It's the principal source of information. You need a personal site, which is the only possible chance you have long term of controlling your image, your brand image in Google. It needs to know that that's where it goes. And everything else is simply corroboration of the information you are feeding it.
You know, this episode's really making me realize that a couple of things that I need to do. I'll be adding some things to my to-do, because I had a personal site and I kind of just let it fall by the wayside. And it was like, because I was busy doing 100 other things, I just was like, fuck, I'm just going to turn this off and I'll go back and fix it. And you know how those things go. So, all right. So here we are on Startup Hustle. And, you know, we like to do what we call the founder's freestyle at the end of my episodes. Ooh. I say my episodes. I'm not the only host of Startup Hustle. Make sure to check out Andrew Morgan's episodes about e-commerce and all things Amazon on Tuesdays, and join Lauren Conaway to listen to Innovate Her and learn all about the great stuff she's doing with that organization. If that isn't enough, we started our own TV show, Jason, Startup Hustle TV. It's been live for about a week. We are following the story of ourselves as entrepreneurs, as well as others. All industries, all locations, all stages are eligible. You can let us know you want to get involved by going to startuphustle.xyz, dropping your name in the form. That went really well, and we're pretty damn excited about it. We're trying to just do something a little bit different. Also, another reason I need to update my knowledge panel, because I turned myself into a TV producer along the way. Now, as I mentioned, Jason is an expert at search engine results, branding, all of it. Go to Cali Cube, and that's KALI Cube.pro, and you can learn more about what his business does and maybe do some stuff with him. So back to the founder's freestyle as we wrap up this episode. What would you really like? What are your closing arguments, sir? What would you like to say to the world?
Well, I started working on my own brand SERP 7 years ago. It's taken me 7 years. And as you can see, I've really, really nailed it. I've got that control. If you fail to get that control today, with Google in particular, you're going to struggle in the future. But it goes beyond Google. It's a question of saying, I need to create a home for my entity. An entity is a thing that we can name. This Jason Barnard, not the Jason Barnard with the podcast in the UK, or the Jason Barnard who's a footballer in South Africa, or the Jason Barnard who is a farmer, I think, in Arizona, or the Jason Barnard who is the professor at Golden Gate University. Each of those is entities, and Google has a lot of trouble understanding which is which. I need to control how it understands who I am, what I do, and who my audience is, if I'm had to have any chance in Google. And it goes beyond that. Today, just Google. So let's just focus on Google. But Amazon, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, Apple, Microsoft, all of these machines are building understanding of the world in a similar manner to a human brain. Think of it as encyclopedias that machines can use to understand, represent the world to their users. And if you want to have any chance in the future, the digital future of your marketing, you have to make sure that you control that understanding and that you feed and educate these machines the way you want them to understand you and not the way that they happen to guess from the rest of the world.
All good, all great points. And, you know, Jason, thank you so much for joining me today. I've never had a blue cartoon dog on the show. So there's a first for everything. For those of you listening, now you have to go check out the live stream and see if he really is a blue dog. There's a couple things here. One, you know, we attacked a very broad subject. I mean, there's no way in 45 minutes to an hour we were going to cover all of search engine marketing. Like, we kind of trended more towards the organic and the things that can go there. Now, one of the things that I wanted to mention on my way out here is, you know, you talk about taking 7 years to groom it. Like, do a little bit. Do a little bit, a lot. And this typically isn't something you're going to just sit down in a few hours. You're like, nailed it. And you're good for the next 7 years. You got to kind of, and that's why I said, like, I've got a couple notes. I've got a couple things I need to go do and I need to go update, because simply for the reason that I was like, shit, I haven't really, you know, it's very easy to put this stuff off to the side. But really, like, so now in my previous ventures with search engine marketing, I just sit there sometimes while I was watching TV or something. I do one thing, do another thing. Like, you, it's like filling up a bucket one grain of sand at a time. But you keep dropping them in, You start to notice it. It makes a difference. When it comes to search engine, all of it. It really is a marathon. It's not a sprint. And if you are, and the last advice is, if you have, well, first off, contact Jason, because I'll tell you, he knows what he's talking about. But if you end up, or you have been working with someone else that's convinced you that it is a sprint and not a marathon, you're talking to the wrong person, because that always ends up in a hurtful situation. Did you have another comment, sir?
Yeah, no, very, very, very good point. And I like the bucket with the grains of sand. And basically what you've just described is what CaliCube does. It basically identifies which grains of sand you should put in that bucket in which order to best serve your purposes, which is to control how these machines understand who you are, what you're doing, who your audience is. So CaliCube is a prioritization of the grains of sand for your bucket.
Yeah. And, you know, with those grains of sand, there are a couple situations where you get to drop a few stones in, and those are the easy kind of fast wins. Now, look, as I've gotten older and, I've really learned to appreciate hiring experts, because all the things, and sometimes people say, oh, but this person wants $200 an hour. You're not paying for that hour. You're paying for the 20 years that occurred before that hour. And you'll learn more from people that'll help you pinpoint it, sometimes help you do it. And also, when you find the right people to help you, they've probably made mistakes and done dumb shit like I have in the past, which I learned more from than creating the quality stuff, because until you get hit with a bullet, you don't realize you're bulletproof in many cases. And that's a kind of a weird way to say it, but that's also why when I'm making investments in startups and doing other stuff related, I like entrepreneurs with scars, because I know that they can get knocked down and get up off the mat. So you go and talk to a few people like that. Like, Mike Tyson's famous for saying everyone had a plan until they got punched in the face. Find a couple people that have been punched in the face so you don't have to. Speaking of getting punched in the face, I'm going to go punch myself in the face for not keeping up with my knowledge panel. So I got to go, Jason. I'll catch up with you next time.
Thanks a lot, man. That was absolutely brilliant. Amazing. Wonderful.
Thank you for joining me.
Thanks, man.
Startup Hustle is brought to you by Fullscale.io, helping you build a software team quickly and affordably. Make sure you reach down and hit that subscribe button. Then come find us on Instagram. See you next time. We do it.